Hello everyone and welcome to the Criticism Network. This network is here to help you improve at Magic the Gathering at every level. From Pauper Leagues to Top 1000 Mythic, we've got you covered. If you want to hear the entire network, head on over to our sponsor at PureMTGO.com, where you can hear each and every show, each and every week, and check out their sponsor, MTGO Traders, and tell them that the CCMTG Network sent you. Now sit back, enjoy the show. From YouTube, podcasts, and more, here's this week's episode from ConstructiveCriticism.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 317th episode of Constructed Criticism. I'm your host, Mason, and I'm joined by Matt Kling. Matt, how are you doing?
I'm doing well.
That's great. I'm glad to hear that. You have a busy day today?
Not especially. I went to work for a bit, but I went home early, so.
Whoa, going home early?
What? Yeah.
So powerful. Well,
yeah.
That's pretty awesome. Well, today we're going to talk about practicing and stuff like that. But first, as always, we have to talk about always improving. So, Kling, how did you improve this week?
Well, as far as Magic specifically, I did not improve that much. But I did implement our training grounds this week into my getting better at Super Smash Brothers. So.
Okay. So you could say, if you wanted to really spin it for me, you could say I practice good practice habits, which later I could apply to my Magic game.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, to be fair, the segment is, you know, about improving at Magic or life in general.
So. Yeah, I know. I was just messing around with you.
I could spin it to Magic, though. And I do think that the things that, obviously, I think that the things that I'm doing right now in Smash Brothers applies just as easily to Magic, which is why it's the training grounds.
Sure, that's very fair. Yeah, you kind of spearheaded this training ground, so I'm excited to have you kind of lead us on this journey this week. It's going to be exciting. For me, I worked on adapting inverter specifically. So this is kind of a more actual thing we can kind of talk about, where normally it's kind of like, you know, an idea of something going on. This is more like, you know, an actual thing. So basically, earlier this week, there was a BNR announcement and nothing happened in Pioneer. Modern, they banned Once Upon a Time, and Legacy, they banned Breach, which I guess is a format technically. And the interesting thing about the Pioneer ban is they talked about the win percent for Inverter. And they talked about it being 49%, not counting mirror matches across Modo data, which is, you know, a lot of games, a really good sample size. It's what we have to work with. And it's a very interesting stat, right? Because the narrative that, you know, we pushed and other people pushed, it maybe was true at the time we were talking about it, was Inverter is the best deck by, you know, a bit. And then it has the best sideboard plans, which makes it the best deck by a lot. And so you should be playing Inverter. And then we kind of get this data, and the data says this isn't the case. And someone kind of posited the idea that maybe part of the reason why Inverter is losing so much is we're metagaming so much for each other, right? We have, like, two Narset's main deck, two Disputes main deck. Some builds are starting to play, like, four JVP's main deck. I even went down that route for a minute, you know? And we were basically, like, over metagaming for one another and still assuming our other matchups were so good, right? Our hubris was so high. And so I started working on what I call ceasefire inverter, which is we can't keep attacking each other. You know, if we keep doing this, we're going to let these stinking and mono white devotion players and Sultai players have the tournaments. And so really worked on figuring out a list that I was happy for at the time going to be playing in Boston, which has now been canceled. I had decided not to go during that time as well, but also like come up with plans for that for my teammates on Nova to hopefully help them win the tournament. I'm really happy with kind of where I'm at right now. I wrote like a little sideboard thing for it for the Nova Patreon. And yeah, I'm excited. And it was fun to work on that and kind of tackle that problem.
Yeah, definitely. And the things you're saying make a lot of sense, right? It's the arms race that we always talk about. Like, you know, it happens a lot in mid-range decks. This is kind of a mid-range deck, so it makes sense that this would happen, like where you'd just be teching more and more for the mirror. It's not so much going over the top, but, you know, as your deck becomes more tuned for the mirror, obviously you lose ground in other matchups.
Yeah, and so. You know, just things like the other decks were figuring out adaptations to beat us, right? Like Mono White Devotion started playing Gideon's Intervention, right? Which is like not a playable Magic card.
Right. But in addition to like a huge split on Gideon's too, right? Like,
yeah.
It used to be back when I was playing a lot of Mono White Devotion that it was like three Gideon in the Trails and you're like, okay, well, we got that in a combo and it's probably okay. And then now it's like, all right, we're going to play three, or, you know, four Gideon in the Trials, two Gideon Allies, Endicars, one other Gideon Blackblade or whatever, and then like Gideon's Intervention in the main deck. And
yeah, they're just like, okay, we are like, seriously, we're not going to lose this, you know? And so like, and those things are just kind of hard. Like Blue-Black, the color pie doesn't have anything to answer Gideon Intervention. It's like only on the stack. And then it's like, okay, well, we can't, like, interact on the stack because we have to interact on the table to answer these Gideons. Right. So we have to cut counter spells. And so I think, like, the idea of, like, adding Ashiok Nightmare Weaver to the main deck that I saw from Canister, I was like, oh, this is great. This is, like, the solution to the problem, you know? And so...
Sure, something that's pretty good in the mirror and also, you know, can potentially win if you can't combo.
Yeah, so, like, the idea that I kind of extrapolated from when I saw it in Canister's deck was that... The Ashiok does three really big things, and two of them are for that matchup. And one, it pressures Gideons by making creatures that can pressure Gideon. It also 2/3s beat 2/2s when it comes to like the ally versus the Ashiok. The second thing is that it answers the intervention or the Gideon of the Trials itself and comes the turret comes down. So if you had like a lot of mana, you could, let's say, set up a Jace, play Ashiok, unsummon Gideon of the Trials, or unsummon, you know, Gideon's intervention, play your inverter and win the game.
And so, right, so we said Nightmare Weaver on the Ashiok, but it's becoming pretty clear to me that you probably meant Nightmare Muse.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Yeah, I meant Nightmare Muse, the 5-mana Ashiok.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry. Their names are so similar.
Yeah, I don't know why they decided to go that way, but yeah.
Yeah, it's a nightmare for us talking about the cards.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it does that, and then it finally kind of plays into like the mid-rangey plan you want to have. And so it's a nice hedge there where I also kind of put the deck towards 4 Oracles. Because so many people that aren't doing that kind of stuff are trying to, like, pressure us really quickly or trying to, like, attack on weird angles. I just want to combo them. It's just like, whatever, sure. I'm hardcore. So, yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
It's awesome.
I mean, the Oracles are also a lot better when you're facing Graveyard Hate or whatever, right?
Like, yeah.
It's, Graveyard Hate's not the most effective against the deck, but it's going to slow you down a lot if you can't protect Jace and you don't have Oracles in your deck, or, like, at least not the full 4.
Yeah, exactly. And so just, you know, get a little bit more selection, help you find your things you want. So that was awesome. That deck list will be up on our Patreon as well, which is a way to support the show. You can go to patreon.com and use code CCMTG at our sponsor, Oasis Games. That was maybe the worst segue of all time, but I'm not editing it out of the show. Do you know why, Kling?
Why is that?
Because Oasis Games is such a good sponsor. They own up to their mistakes when they mess something up. I've had bad orders in the past, and they fixed it for me. And so, just like Oasis Games fixed the problems in the past, I'm going to fix the plug for them this week and do it right there. So, there you go. You can go to our sponsor, Oasis Games, as well as the Patreon. And part of the perk of being a patron is you get this Patreon question. So, I'm going to read this week's question from Adrian. Adrian asks, how do you find the truth about a matchup if you're testing by yourself? How close an event would blah, 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 blah. How close would be the event for this to be time efficient? Some context. This person doesn't play much of the targeted constructed format, but reads articles, listens to podcasts, checks MTGO results, watches streamers. Thanks in advance. So, Kling, how do you do this? It seems particularly hard to me, too, because I think something that I lean on is talking to other people. You know, like, I'll form my hypothesis and my theories like I did with Ashiok, right? We'll have these conversations, and then you'll say either checks or it doesn't. So what do you think about all this?
Yeah, I think that the best resource you're going to have at this point is going to be getting information from people that you think have a pretty good handle on things. I think the truth is that, like, a lot of us are going to miss, right? Like, we just talked about this inverter thing, right? That's a perfect example of people that, you know, thought certain matchups were good, and they weren't.
Mm-hmm. Actually, we had this conversation recently. I'd love to have it here because I think it's important to this. The part of the two is just like having the conversation and coming to conclusions helps build a process of like learning and a process of critical thinking and attacking stuff. And then even if it's wrong, as long as you don't die on that hill and you're not willing to adapt, it can be a good learning process where it's like, okay, we did a really good job of planning out these things, but we did a really bad job of considering how other decks are going to adapt to us. And how metagaming for each other is going to let those adaptations really take hold. And so now we need to like kind of reassess things.
Yeah, definitely. It's mm-hmm. It's easy to come up with a plan and then not realize that the things that you've changed are going to make different matchups worse or better, you know, sometimes. But
yeah, and then now next time you kind of have the situation for the next format with the next great deck, you can adapt to that and be like, okay, wait, am I doing that thing I did with Inverter where I'm playing like, you know, 4 Glare of Heresy's main deck or something like that? Like, what are we doing?
Yeah, so. I'm not sure how tangential this is, but I do remember a story about one of the pro teams testing for a pro tour, and it was, I think, right when Modern first came out, or near there, and they all ended up playing Jund, and it ended up being, like, a terrible choice for that particular tournament, and they were talking about the flaw in their testing was that they were testing with, like, a 25-card sideboard or a 50-card sideboard or whatever for, like, the whole time, and then, you know, never bothered to test it with the 15 card sideboard that they come up with.
Interesting.
Which sounds, I mean, it sounds in hindsight like a pretty easy problem to foresee, but, you know.
Yeah, but if you're under the theory Jund's a good deck, then really what matters is like figuring out what cards actually matter.
Right. That's certainly part of it. I also think that the general knowledge of Magic has increased over time. So like things that seem obvious now were not as obvious 10 years ago.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah, I guess it's kind of funny to think that that's actually the timeline, right? And this is a little tangential, but I think it's interesting and worth talking about. We're going to talk about practicing a lot today, Adrian, so don't worry. You're going to get a lot of information on this. But, like, yeah, Magic players are just much better, and information spreads much more quickly now, too. And we have all these kind of things that we know, right? And, right. Like, we know that, like, recursive card advantage on something is, like, pretty powerful, especially if it comes down early, right? So, like, Planeswalkers are kind of like that. But maybe back in the day, it was harder to know, like, how strong this, you know, Planeswalker that takes up to make a 2/2 is going to be or whatever, so...
Yeah, definitely. Everything is a system that builds on another. So, like, you already have something that you can reference. So you don't have to, like, redo everything from the start.
Yep.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, and you see how you also end up with these super powerful cards, too, right? Like, if you're at WotC, it might lead you to try and maybe push boundaries a bit more. Yeah, sure.
I mean, so the thing that I just said also ties right back into the same thing, right? Which is that once you have foundations, you can build upon them, right? That's how you can tell what a matchup looks like. Like, if I can say, okay, well, this matchup is similar to a matchup that I've already seen, or, you know, this deck functions in this way and this deck functions in a way that I've already seen as well, and I know how that kind of those kind of decks are going to interact with each other. That's one way that I can tell whether a matchup's good without a lot of testing.
Yep. That, I think that's really good. One of the other ways I would say to be maybe that could be helpful when talking about specifically not having many other people to talk to would be to question yourself, right? It would be to like formulate that plot, that thesis, kind of like have the conversation we're having by yourself, and then try and think of the counter argument. Even if you think it doesn't check out exactly, just kind of like attack it like a negative Nancy, and then be like, okay, could I answer that? And what is what I'm saying making sense? Because that's what your friends are going to do if it doesn't check out, right?
Right.
And so,
yeah, you got to sort of play devil's advocate with yourself.
Yeah, you have to kind of, you know, be like, all right, me, like, is my fear of this actually, like, you know, substantial? Or like, and then like, let's take that to the logical extreme, right? I think another thing, you know, Adrian kind of talks about here is like how close to the event should he start testing to be time efficient when it comes to like finding the truth of the matchup. And I think this kind of depends on how much you've played Magic and how much you kind of built these things up as well. Because I think if you've played a lot, even with like a type of deck, but have played a lot of Magic, it can be pretty easy at times to figure it out, like what actually matters in the matchup. Like, I think a good example of this is probably like Elspeth Conquers Death and the blue-white mirrors. It's like, okay, this thing answers every problematic card and then buys back one of our strong cards. So I'm going to protect my Elspeth Conquers Death with my life. I'm going to use my Teferi minuses on those to reset them. I'm going to pick my spots with Conquers Death. I'm not going to run out of Conquers Death on something that doesn't matter. That kind of thing, right? And so then you kind of get this idea of that. And that can be kind of harder if maybe you're still trying to figure out like how the blue-white decks play out against each other. So I think that's something you have to kind of figure out for yourself, but I think it's better to get started early on something, and then if the metagame changes, you have that work you've already done to help build on for trying to figure it out last minute.
Yeah, I agree. And also, with time efficiency specifically being the question, like, you're going to get you're always going to get more out of testing something. Like, there's not really a hard plateau, or at least not one that's reachable. But it does start to sort of level out. So, like, you're going to be making massive... what's the word I'm looking for?
Massive gains?
Yeah, yeah. You're going to be getting massive gains early on, and then it's going to, like, kind of taper off. So that process also quickens as you get, you know, better and more familiar with all the different decks. Like, just the more Magic you've played, the quicker that process becomes. So it really depends on where you're at. But I would say that, like, for me, for instance, I can usually test a matchup, you know, the day before an event and pretty much come to conclusions. But that certainly wasn't always the case. And I think that, you know, I think that's more like a self-evaluation thing about where, like, what your time efficiency is for something like that. Mm-hmm. But I also think that it's not too hard to realize when you're not getting very much out of testing a matchup anymore.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of something we're going to mention in the main training grounds, but, like, having goals and coming into it. And the goal could be to figure something out. But, like, sometimes that the goal could be, like, all right, figure out what matters in the matchup. And that can be kind of nebulous. And sometimes it's better to have targeted goals along the way with that, right? So it might be, like, figure out, does Narset actually matter? Like, there aren't that many draw spells in the deck, right? Like, is this card that actually matters, yes or no?
Right.
You know? And so, like, kind of do something along that. And then if you're kind of framing that, that might help you figure out the quote-unquote truth of a matchup, right? Like, if the matchup revolves a lot around your opponent casting draw spells, right, and you don't know that going into it, and then you say in part of your testing, I want to see how good Narset is one of my, like, mini goals. And you can have, like, a couple of those, and you realize, man, Narset's really good. That might help frame the matchup where it's like, okay, my Narset's shutting down their stuff a lot. And then it's like, all right, I have that piece of the map kind of, like, undefogged, right? Like, if you look at it in a video game, it's like, all right, that part opened up. And now that I know that, I can kind of figure out other things. And it might turn out...
Yeah, you can extrapolate on it.
Exactly, yeah. And then you can reverse engineer it to get to a point where it's like, okay, these things matter for this reason. The card, if I have Narset in play, then the card draw can't happen. And because the card draw couldn't happen, really matters about sticking our haymakers. And since that matters a lot, Elspeth Conqueror's Death is the thing. So I need to hold up absorbs for my own Elspeth Conqueror's Death, their Dream Trawlers, and figure it out from there. You know,
right.
So you can kind of figure that out as an example of the blue-white control mirror from, you know, early in the format. So, Adrian, I hope that was helpful. We're going to be talking about some of this stuff, you know, as we go on. Just the one thing I would say is you kind of mentioned, and I get that there's only so much time in the day, but you mentioned reading articles, listening to podcasts, and checking MTGO results. I think trying to get watch games of streamers can be very important, especially if those streamers are hyper-focused on the competitive side when they're doing it. So an example might be, like, I have streamers that I watch when I just want to have fun and relax, right? And then there are streamers I'll go to when I want to, like, actually learn something about a matchup. So, like, if I was thinking about trying to learn Rakdos, right, I would check out, like, F2K Ashlas on Twitch. But if I wanted to, like, you know, maybe hang out and have a more fun time, I might, you know, just turn on whatever stream has that title regardless, right? And, you know, maybe it's someone that is just, you know, having a really fun time, doing a great job engaging with chat, and they're just kind of playing, but they're not playing with, like, a purpose, right, or a goal. So,
right.
And that can be a great way of also, like, you can talk to that Twitch streamer, and they might know something. And so you're talking about how, like, if you're alone and you don't have anyone to test with, what do you do? I would say maybe a big part of this that we kind of glossed over is try to find people to talk to, you know? And even if the Twitch streamer just gives you, like, you know, a quick answer or something, maybe that could be very helpful. And that might be a thought that you didn't even think. So, all right. You ready for this training ground, Kling?
Oh, yeah.
All right. So we're going to talk about today's training ground is focused practice. So, Kling, you really led the charge on this week's training grounds. I was kind of having a hard time coming up with one. You got us here. So I'd love to know, what is focused practice? What are we talking about?
So focused practice is basically what the name sounds like. It's practicing with focus. So if you
I'm sorry,
practice...
I wasn't focusing. What was that?
So when you're just playing Magic, oftentimes you're not really practicing. Like, playing Magic can be fun. It certainly is, but I mean, practicing can be fun too. But what I'm saying is, like, you know, practice or playing Cube Draft isn't exactly practicing. Like, you'll still get something out of it, but not to the same level. Like, if I'm testing for my, you know, standard SCG or whatever, and I'm playing Cube Draft, I'm not really getting the same gains as I would if I were, you know, specifically practicing the standard metagame.
Yeah.
So basically, just practicing with intent, having a specific goal in your mind is what focus practice is. And these goals can be, you know, something really basic, like, say you realize that you're bad at combat math, or like pivoting in mid-range with mid-range decks, or like you're bad in control mirrors or whatever. Targeted or focus practicing would be specifically trying to practice those skills.
So, yeah, so when you talk about focus practice in that context, you started to use something that I was going to talk about, so I'm excited here, is targeted practice, right? So when you're target practicing, you're like kind of, or focus testing a matchup is what some people call it. You're kind of zoning in on one thing, right? And you're trying to, like, figure that out. And, you know, like we talked here, it could be like sometimes figuring stuff out can just be as simple as, like, I am bad at combat math. I need to practice doing these things. How do you go about doing that sort of thing?
I think everything, a lot of the different minutia will have different ways to practice them. Like, for instance, if I was specifically looking to get better at combat math, I would actually put myself in situations where I'm more likely to face combat math, like limited. Mm-hmm. Like, when you're playing constructed, there's going to be combat math, obviously, right? Which is how you, you know, probably realize that you're not good at it. But it's very much in the forefront in limited.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, so you're just kind of trying to put yourself in situations where that matters. When you're kind of having these focused practice sessions as well, are you trying to, like, be efficient with your time? Like, is it a thing where you're kind of just going to let it happen as it happens and just kind of focus on that? Or are you trying to, like, specifically, like, distill the process down?
No, I think with focused practice, you should be trying to maximize your time efficiency. That's the whole point, right? Like, given an infinite timeline, you would probably gain all of these skills just by playing Magic for fun. Mm-hmm. But since we don't have infinite time, focused practice will really help expedite the process.
It's interesting. So you said that, you know, given an infinite timeline, if you're just playing Magic for fun, you get these process. And I kind of want to call bull, like, maybe with, like, true infinite, if you're always playing and always thinking about stuff, you would figure things out. But I think if you don't actively put your mind to it, it can be very easy to miss stuff in Magic and not actually improve at a rate at all. I think it's very
sure.
Easy.
Yeah, I'm talking like actual infinite though, like the number, you know, like, or sure, like the
you
mathematical
spend all
concept
that time
of infinity.
Always playing Magic, then yeah, yes. I guess so. But, like, you know, maybe infinite, maybe our visions of infinity is different. You know, I'm not going to play Magic forever and ever.
Well, that's what I'm saying specifically if you were on an infinite timeline and you were just going to do nothing but this.
Gotcha. All right. Well, sure. Long story short, I'm just trying to say that I think this is a very important thing, right?
Yes, I agree.
Yeah. I think that, like, focus practice and, like, having a goal and setting out to it is something that is pivotal to improving at Magic. And I also think that it's important to set reasonable goals and attainable goals and stuff that you can work on as well. So, like, I think a great example is if you're bad at combat math, playing a lot of limited and putting yourself in those combat math situations, or, you know, if you're going to play constructed, playing decks where combat math is going to come up more, right? Like maybe a mono red or a gruel deck or something like that, right? And then you're going to encounter these situations and work on them. It's important because Magic is a lot like math in a lot of weird ways. Where you kind of need to know these basic building blocks to move up the pyramid, right? Like, you can't do division. You can't do long division without division type of thing, right?
Right, yeah. It's certainly going to be hard to do, like, you know, algebraic equations if you don't know your times tables or whatever.
Exactly. So, and I think Magic's the same way, where I think it's like, okay, I really want to play these inverter mirrors, right? But if you're not good at pivoting a matchup or targeting what matters in a given game, then that can be a really, like, a big hindrance, I should say, when you're actually playing those games.
Right.
Yep. So, Kling, with the, like, the importance of the time management and stuff like that, how did you go about it when you were doing it, kind of, you know, like, when you're trying to focus test something or be time efficient, how did you go about that? So maybe someone at home just hasn't ever thought about doing this before and they're kind of lost on what to do.
Yeah, so it's going to really depend on what thing that you are having a problem with. Like, if I was having a problem with control mirrors, I would obviously test control mirrors. That's a way more focused practice than just playing my blue white deck through some leagues or whatever. If I was having a problem with pivoting specifically, I would play a mid range deck. I would probably try to play against an aggressive deck because it's a matchup where you're specifically going to have to be the control deck early, and then try to figure out at what points I'm supposed to pivot and, you know, note games when I lose too early, or lose from pivoting too early, rather, or lose from pivoting too late. Like, if I let them draw into the burn spells that they need, then that's probably I didn't start attacking aggressively enough. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, if I attack and then die to a goblin guide or whatever, then I probably, you know, started attacking too early and thought the game was already under my control.
Yeah, I think the one of the situations I have of this as, like, an example is actually Amulet Titan, which is an easier example, but still is an example where your early game, your goal is to set up your mana and to get to a Titan as quickly as possible. And then from that point, you kind of have two pivot points. Normally, the default pivot point is once you have a Titan play, you can't really lose. And so you make it so you don't lose as much as possible, right? So you're like, search up a Pact of Negation, or, you know, you'll get a like a Radiant Fountain and bounce it a couple times against a burn deck. And there are other times, though, where you need to put them like on a two-turn clock. And you're like, okay, this isn't going to actually matter. I need to like eight them with a Titan and then set up for the next Titan or whatnot, right? Or to put myself in a position where they have to have this thing. And so that was an example of me when I was playing that deck. It's like, okay, what can I reasonably do? And I got to like focus in on that specific aspect of pivoting.
So, yeah, definitely. Yeah, you can note when you're losing because you tried to play too conservatively because, you know, they were able to either deal with all your threats or just kill you before that. And then the opposite is true as well. Like if you just run out of steam or whatever when you're trying to be too aggressive.
Yep. So let's kind of talk about how we're going to keep this task in mind when we're, you know, actually practicing. Like, how do you go about that? Are there things you do besides actually thinking about it? Like, do you set up situations in your head? Do you like listen? Do you like look at specific board states from other games? Like, you know, watch coverage?
You can certainly take notes if you want. It's probably something that I could get better at is taking notes. Mm-hmm. But I think honestly, just giving it conscious thought is like most of the battle, because so many times I know that I've probably talked about this 1,000 times on the podcast, but like if you're autopiloting in Magic, you're not really learning much.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
You're still learning something, but like it's not nearly as much as if you were, you know, consciously thinking about the things that you need to do.
Yeah. So when you said like conscious thoughts about it, right, and like mm-hmm. actively thinking about it, can you explain that to someone who maybe hasn't, like, they know what those two words are, but what do you actually mean by that?
I'm not sure what you're driving at.
So you said giving it conscious thought, right?
I've recently learned that some people do not have an inner monologue.
Yes.
But my brain thinks in words. So, you know, I will think the words, you know, are it. Like, for instance, the one that I've talked about the most and the one that was the most helpful for me was I realized that I was really bad at understanding what a game was about and understanding how I was going to win a specific game. And so I would consciously think, okay, how do I win this game from here? What is winning this game look like? And I would just keep talking to myself about this and coming up with what I think that is important in this game, instead of just playing the cards as they come.
Gotcha. Okay. So you're like,
so it mostly just repeating the question to myself as it comes up, you know?
Gotcha. Okay. So I guess my next question is something that I kind of do is I'll reflect post-match. And I think this, for what it's worth, is a lot more common when you lose, but also when I win, and think about, like, did those things matter? Did I do the things correctly? Is that what you're talking about? Like, for example, let's say your goal was to focus on pivoting, like we talked about, right?
Mm-hmm.
And let's say you won the game, but, like, post-match, are you thinking about, did I actively, like, are you questioning whether your pivot was correct or not? Is that something that you do, or?
Yeah, I mean, certainly I try to evaluate the games after they've been played as well.
Okay, awesome. Well, as for what it's worth, I think a lot of people don't do that when they get the W. I think when you lose, it's very common and almost like a weird norm thing. Like when you lose, like sometimes you talk to your opponent about the thing, just mm-hmm. to like get their insight. But sometimes it feels like a weird, like just societal thing in Magic players, but like never happens when you win, you know?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's at least as important when you're winning.
Yeah. I sometimes I feel like Magic games are decided by, you know, some variance, especially, like, if your opponent just drew a bunch of lands. I definitely know that, like, I've been in spots where, like, my opponent just, like, drew a bunch of lands in a row, and my winning image didn't involve them drawing a bunch of lands in a row, and I just won, right? And I've been like, oh my gosh, I got so lucky. I played so terribly two turns back, right? And your opponent isn't very receptive because, they, you know, they just lost their game because they're like, duh, I knew that. I was thinking about that, you know? But it's still important to like kind of have those thoughts and to think about that, right? And to be conscious on working on the things you're wanting to work on. I think that like when I first started doing constructive criticism full time as a host, I would have these same training ground or these same always improving moments for multiple weeks in a row, right? And I talked about this in the podcast before where it's like, I know that could definitely come off as me phoning it in or whatever, but it's me actively working on something for like a while and it's going to take me time to really get that ingrained.
Yeah, definitely. So, yeah, I mean, so that's probably one that I just missed, honestly. I feel like I sometimes in Magic, I end up in a very closed off bubble. So I don't realize the things that some people aren't doing, like in like all the people that I, you know, play Magic with regularly and associate with are like fairly competitive players. So we always talk about the games, whether we win or lose.
Mm-hmm.
So it's possible that I'm just not noticing that people don't do that as much when they're winning.
Oh, yeah. Well, just think. Well, so sometimes I think it's twofold. One, I think it kind of can come off the wrong way if you're like, if you don't,
I would not plan to talk to my opponent about it. Like if I'm playing a Grand Prix or whatever, like somewhere where I don't know my opponent and I know that I played terribly and got very lucky to win because they flooded out or whatever, you know, I might give them, you know, condolences or whatever for getting mana flooded, but I'm not going to, you know, ask them for advice or whatever most of the time because I feel like they might be salty about it.
I have a question for you. I don't think what you're saying is necessarily wrong. It's kind of a question. If you were to lose, would you ask your opponent their opinion on something?
That's what I'm more likely to ask their opinion if I lose, yes.
Okay.
Because I think that given that these interactions are so they're so isolated, I feel like my main goal is just try to, you know, keep everybody having a good time before it's trying to improve. Like, trying to improve is a secondary goal at a tournament.
Oh, it's so interesting to me. This is going to be a tangent. I can already tell, so get ready, people at home. But I think it's important to talk about. Hang on. So you're telling me that... So for what it's worth, I also, when I play against people, am very focused on, like, making sure they have a good time and that, you know, everyone's having fun. Because I think that's important. But you think first is fun before, like, improving?
My first goal is winning.
Sure, yeah. Besides that, obviously, right? We're at a tournament. That's an implied goal. That's zero. That's not an actual goal.
Oh, we both sure.
All right, keep talking.
Sure. I think that making sure that they're not having a bad time because of something I'm doing is more important than my improvement at a tournament, yes.
Sure. So I think that you obviously, what I'm about to say is something that's like a blanket statement, but you can never take things blanketly and need to play things like obviously you need to like, read your opponent's social cues and whatnot, right? If they haven't been receptive the whole match, I'm not going to talk to them about like what happened if I lost. But like if they've been receptive the whole match, I might talk to them about like, what do you think about me going this way down a route, right? Like, and how I played this turn, even if I won. And sure, I've definitely done that a lot of times before, because for me, while like I think fun is pivotal and it's very important to me that my opponent walks away from the table having a good experience. Like, it is crucial, in my opinion. It's also crucial that if there's a moment where I could learn from someone, I want to take that opportunity.
I agree with what you're saying, and okay. It's possible that what I'm saying came off out of context, but
okay.
I'm already creating a hypothetical scenario where our opponent's getting mana screwed and I'm playing badly. Like, most of the time when you're doing that, your opponent's going to be kind of salty about it, right? Like, they're going to be, like, you know, at least a little upset that this is happening to them, and for, like, pretty good reason.
Sure. But, so do you think that the rapport was I think this is interesting. Like, so if you think the rapport was good earlier in the match, right, and then those things started happening, would you talk to them about it or not?
Yeah. I mean, sure. If we've been joking and everything the whole time, yeah. Like you said, you got to read your opponent, right? Like, if your opponent seems like the kind of person that would be receptive to that kind of thing, yeah, I've certainly talked to people about, you know, plays in the game, even if I've won.
Okay. Yeah. I just think that. This all started because I said earlier there are like two reasons why I think it doesn't happen. I think one of them is I think it is pivotal to make sure your opponent has a good time and fun and are respected. But I also think like we all need to accept that every time we sit down to a match of Magic, you know, like there's a high percentage chance, even if the matchups favored you, right? Like a 70-30 matchup is like an insane matchup statistic in Magic, right? But you're still 30% to lose. Like you're going to lose. And there could be a moment where you could learn something from the opponent. And them talking about how they made a mistake when they were winning might actually be super insightful for you. Because let's say that you never questioned that line before, and then you're sitting across from me and I win and I say, hey, do you think it was wrong that like I aggressively Elspeth Conquered Death your Narset and didn't save it for your other Elspeth Conquers Death? Right?
Mm-hmm.
And they might be like, oh, I don't know. And then like that could be a moment where they tell you something you never even thought of. Like, I remember this happened to me once where someone was like, yeah, I think I was supposed to just hold up mana and go because I was representing this thing. And when instead they, like, you know, they played some creature that didn't matter, which, like, let me go for something. And ultimately they end up winning. But they're like, yeah, I think that if I represent Absorb there, the chance for you to not do something is more impactful than me putting, like, a 2-2 on the board. Right?
Right.
And it's like, oh, wow, that's, like, just so true. There are just going to be times that's right. And I would, like, never learn that if my opponent never talked me out of that after they won the game.
Yeah, I think that that's definitely true, and I'm not trying to imply that you should never ask for your opponent's, you know, thoughts on a game, especially, yeah, you know, whether you win or lose. I've certainly done both, you know, many times in my Magic career, but I would say that more often I've seen somebody try to talk about a matchup when their opponent is clearly steaming,
mm-hmm,
and it's just like, you know, maybe you can come back up to them later or whatever and talk about it, but, like, you know, give them a bit to cool off.
Sure, that's reasonable enough. All right, well, that was interesting. That was an interesting little tangent about all that. I do think that is a Magic culture thing that I would like us all to kind of veer away from. But I understand that that's like an unreasonable utopian type thing I'm saying. So, you know, maybe that's just not something to even worry about. Let's kind of talk about, though, using our time outside the actual game, right? Because in all of our, you know, examples we've given so far, we kind of talked about, like, all right, when I'm in the game, I'm going to do this, or I'm going to think about this, or after my match, right? Which is technically outside the game, but, you know, we're just, like, right in that whole, like, 50 minutes to play a match thing. Kling, how do you practice effectively, or have focused practice outside of your time playing Magic?
So are you asking what things that I will do to try to improve at Magic while I'm not playing Magic?
Yeah, so, like, setting aside time to, like, maybe watch a streamer, like we mentioned earlier, that you know is particularly good in a matchup, or like an article or a podcast, or even one thing that I do is, like, I'll think about board states and scenarios that are kind of common and kind of, like, play through things in my head that way. Right.
Yeah. These are all the exact things that I was going to mention. I mean, a lot of us have jobs where we can at least listen to podcasts. So that's certainly a good way. They've also, I mean, this applies even to physical activities, really. They've done a lot of studies that have suggested that just thinking about an activity will greatly improve how well you do the task.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you know, for instance, I've been practicing a lot of Smash recently. And I was watching a video about how to improve your movement. And they were talking about just thinking about it even when you're not playing. If you're thinking about the actual actions of it, it will improve your play in the game. So, yeah, just generally thinking about Magic is an effective way to practice while you're doing other things.
Yeah, I agree. I think, and I've seen some studies that support what you were saying there about, like, actually thinking about stuff and, like, visualizing it can be very helpful to the actual act, like, once you get in the moment. Because right, it's almost like you know, as long as you're realistic about everything, you know, it's like you were in that moment already, right? Like, your thoughts and your memories and stuff are just you remembering things you've already done. And if you're, like, realistic about it, then you just kind of have that practice time without really having it in a weird way, right? And that's much easier for basketball or something than Magic, but still effective.
Sleeping as well. Like, I mean, they've had a lot of studies that have shown that if you practice something and then, you know, go to bed and then wake up, you'll be actually a lot better at the thing after you wake up, like, significantly better when you wake up than when you were practicing the thing. Mm-hmm. Because your mind actually practices these things while you sleep.
Yeah, that's why I'm so good at, you know, crying, because, you know, I cry right before I go to bed, and then, you know, I wake up and I'm like, oh my god. You know, but seriously, yeah, that is true. That is something that has been shown in studies, and I think, you know, it's been proven to be a real thing. And then I mean,
as long as we're talking about time management, like, getting the appropriate amount of sleep is also insanely helpful when you're trying to play Magic tournaments, especially given how many people don't get an appropriate amount of sleep. Like, if you're the person in the tournament getting 8 hours, like, you know, that's already a free, you know, extra 20% or whatever.
Yeah. I always love when you talk about percentages, because you always get a 20. It's just so unreasonable. You're like, yeah, if you're a cyborg guy, you're like 20% more to win. I'm like, well, I got 20 from sleeping, 20 from that, and then 20% for, like, practicing. I'm like, yeah, exactly. 140% to win this tournament. You
know? Yeah, exactly. I mean, how did you do at your last two tournaments?
The last one I got 55th, and then before that first. But, you know, that's fair.
You must not have given yourself the 140% at the last one.
I got paired against Infect, man. Give me a break. I was so cognitive of my bad situation. If I was sleep deprived, I would have played like a madman, you know?
Yeah, exactly. If you had just gotten 8 hours, you'd been fine.
No, I'm saying I got too much sleep. It made me too aware of the doom of playing against Infect as Amulet.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. I was too aware. I needed to be delusional and have this, you know, this hubris, sure, that I could win the matchup.
4 days of no sleep, then you could have been in a whole other world and not even known what was happening to you. And then you'd have came back and told us how you won.
Exactly.
It's basically the same thing.
Easy. No, but I hope that was helpful that's going to kind of do it for this week's Training Grounds. Kling, is there anything you wanted to say before we wrapped up here?
Nothing specific. I think we covered a lot.
Yeah, and I think these are things that, as the name would suggest, practicing focused practice will lead to great results, and it is something that your first time might not feel very validating. You might not... It's actually, this is something that I was talking to a friend about recently that I think is important to kind of talk about here. Is that sometimes in magic, it is hard to see your results translate. And then also they take a while to translate. Because you're kind of having to practice these certain things, and then you have to implement them in games. And it can take a while to actually see that happen. And part of that's because sometimes you're doing the right things and you're still losing, right? Like, something that is frustrating sometimes for magic players is like, man, I made the right plays, I did everything right, but I just still lost, right? And you have to accept that that's part of magic. And when you're playing the game, that's part of it. And so sometimes if you're not being a good job of critically thinking about those things with yourself, then you're not going to see those gains. So that's kind of just an important thing to remember when it comes to practice, that it is something that takes time. It's just like working out, riding a bike, falling in love, you know, put some work into it. And then eventually you're going to get something out of it.
Falling in love takes time, man. I've been doing it all wrong.
Maybe I've been doing it wrong too. Maybe that's why I'm taking too much time, you know. But that's gonna do it for this week's episode of the podcast. If you enjoyed it, you can go to patreon.com/ccmtg. The Patreon is, I had a meeting last night with the new co-host, and me and her talked. There you go. You have a female co-host coming in the future. And me and her talked, and we have kind of got everything laid out, and we're just kind of taking care of a few behind-the-scenes things, and very soon the new Patreon tier is going to be up. Almost nothing's really changed, so don't worry about that. I know I said that in the past, but we kind of had like a meeting last night to actually discuss these things and kind of finalize some things, and at the time, it looked like everything was good. We checked back in. It's going to be great. Don't worry about it. Y'all are going to love it. And that's also the segues into this. Kling, your watch is almost done. We have 3 more weeks. Are you excited? Are you sad? What are you feeling?
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit of a mix. I'm excited to see where the show goes, but obviously, you know, I'll miss doing this.
Nice. Well, that's good to hear. I was expecting to be like, 3. I thought it was 2. but no, it's exciting. I'm really excited for y'all to meet the new co-host, my new co-host, or, you know, the new host. That, I don't know how to say that, but she's awesome. It's an exciting time. So yeah, I am excited to talk to y'all next week. If you enjoy the show, check out patreon.com. You can always check out our sponsors too at Oasis Games and use code CCMTG for 4% off every order, and code Would That Be Good for 15% off your first order. Some events got canceled today.
I think that those are the opposite, but.
I see. I'm pretty sure CCMTG is the 4% order, though. I could be wrong.
I guess I think that it's the other way around, but...
Whatever. Just use a code. There are codes to be used. I feel like...
Use whichever one works and gives you the most money off.
Yeah, exactly. What I was about to say is, even though there aren't events... Some events have been canceled today at the time of this recording, there are still going to be more events in the future. This gives you great time to kind of practice, figure out what you want, and then... kind of buy the whole 75 from Oasis, you know, you get some time to save up some money, boom, purchase all in one big bulk, and then you get that sweet, sweet 19% off using both codes. That's awesome. That's just like a huge savings.
You definitely can't do that. Just
yes, you can. You can use both codes at the same time.
Can you?
Yeah, I did it. I did it with my Scapeshift deck.
Wild. I do not believe that you were supposed to be able to do that.
Well, guess what? Right now, if you go to Oasis Games on
the... do it in the next 24 hours.
Well, if you've been doing it in the past, you got a big savings. I know friends who did it too. But, you know, I saved like $80 or whatever on, you know, like a Titan Shift. Like, just a huge amount of money because I bought, like, you know, basically everything at one place at one time, you know. So, get a little bit of chance to save up some money. That's awesome. A great opportunity. So thank you all so much. We'll be back next week with another episode of Constructed Criticism.